This is the first in a new series, Culture Explored. And what we're going to be doing is basically one Sunday in each of the next few months, we're going to take a major issue or a trend in our society and just have a little think about it from a Christian perspective. And hopefully as we do that, we'll get to understand the world a little better, and we'll have our attitudes and our behaviours shaped by the Bible as we see what it has to say on some of these subjects. And as Tim's just said, tonight's topic is the media. Now, I have to say right from the start that I'm no expert on the media. I actually wanted to swap with Tim and take next month's slot on Do Christians Make Better Lovers? But for some reason, he was reluctant to let me. And obviously, because I'm no expert, I just need to say a few things by way of a disclaimer, really, so you don't get the wrong end of the stick and my back's covered. Firstly, this isn't the definitive Christian analysis of the media. It's just a few thoughts that I had based on a small amount of research that I've done. So feel free to disagree with me afterwards, as long as you're not too mean about it. Secondly, I'll be making a lot of generalisations, because obviously we're going to have to do quite a broad overview. So if you can't fit yourself in with some of the trends that I'm describing, then don't worry, you're just the exception that proves the rule. And thirdly, because we're really only sort of scraping the tip of the iceberg this evening, I'm hoping that you'll be sufficiently interested by what I've said that you'll maybe go home and have a think about it yourself, go and discuss it with people over coffee. I should think some people will be heading up to Utopia Coffee Bar up the road. So yeah, please do discuss these things with the others who are here tonight. It is going to be a little bit interactive as we go on, and you will have some time later on to discuss a couple of little poses I'll put to you at the time. Right then, the media. So we're going to do our Culture Explored tonight under three basic headings. What is it like? What does it mean? As in, what are the consequences of it? And what does the Bible have to say about it? So firstly, the media. What is it like? It's an important question, isn't it? Because we need to know what we're talking about. So I thought I'd get you guys and Paul here to do the hard work. We're going to play a little bit of word association. Now, for those of you who didn't watch Mallet's Mallet in your youth, I'll explain how it works. I'm going to say the word media, and you guys are just going to say, shout out the first words that come into your head. And Paul's going to type them up in this lovely blank space we've got here. So off we go. Media. TV. Brilliant, Louise. Sorry?
Newspapers.
Communication and hype. Was that? Brilliant.
Entertainment.
Yep. Okay. Let's recap. For Paul's sake, TV, we've had newspapers, that's right. Someone said hype, someone said, that's a nice, hype's a nice short one. Entertainment, yeah, we've had. Libel, okay. Cynic in the front row. Paul won't thank you for that. I feel like I'm on the hard spell. P-A-P-A. I feel like you are. Transient. I'm going to challenge someone to do a one-syllable one. Pop. Okay, thanks, Tim. Okay, that's probably enough to be going on with. Obviously, big range of stuff we've got there. And I think the fact that there is such a big range probably shows that even though it's a term that's in constant use, the word media is actually quite difficult to pin down. So I've turned to a trusted and knowledgeable companion to help us this evening. Not Tim, the dictionary. Here's what the dictionary had to say for itself. This will make things altogether clearer. Media, transmissions that are disseminated widely to the public. Now, in English, basically that means that the media is just anything that's a way of telling lots of people something. Anything that's a way of telling lots of people something. The word media is just the plural of the word medium, meaning a way or a means of conveying information. So the media includes sort of the traditional areas that we think of, some of which we had up there, things like TV, newspapers and radio. It would include more kind of cultural type things like film and literature. And it would include new ways of mass information delivery like the internet, which makes media a very broad term indeed. It's something to which we all have a huge daily exposure, whether that's in the newspapers and the magazines that we read, the television we watch, or the websites that we visit. Probably most of us spend several hours a day soaking up stuff produced by the media. And since what goes in must come out, that's bound to have an influence on the way that we think and the way that we act, both as individuals and as a society as a whole. Just stick up your hand for me if you think you haven't had any contact with anything to do with the media this week. No one. Good. That's a relief. The media really is a central feature of our society. But what is it like? Well, we've had a few suggestions popped up on the screen a minute ago. And I picked three more of my own, three characteristics to just quickly look at that I think are particularly important when we're trying to understand what the media is like. So number one, it's instant. More work for you guys. I told you it would be interactive. Can a few people just shout out some of the major news stories of the last few weeks and days? Major news. Tsunami, yep. Bush's inauguration, yep. Iraq. Dave Blunkett. Blair versus Brown, yep. Yeah, that was a big one. There's stuff there from all over society and all over the world. Stuff that in the past would have taken weeks or months to reach our ears. I should think, you know, 100 years ago, a prince could have quite happily gone to a party dressed in something inappropriate and no one would have found out. But now, because of the instant mass media, we can find out about global events within minutes of them taking place. And a lot of the time, that's brilliant. For instance, if it weren't for the global news media, it would have probably taken years to drum up the millions of pounds of aid that's already been raised for the tsunami victims. The instant media can be a really powerful tool for good. And it's not just the news media. We can watch England humiliate South Africa at cricket live. We can watch a group of C-list celebrities on Channel 4 humiliate themselves live. And at the push of a button or the click of a mouse, we can find out pretty much anything about the world we live in. It's fantastic. Now, the second characteristic kind of follows on a little bit from the first. Number two, it's undemanding. Now, because the lives that we lead are so busy and the world moves so fast, we don't really have time for anything that we'll have to think about too deeply. And the media caters perfectly to that requirement. The instant news, comment and entertainment that we receive is, by and large, very undemanding. Now, obviously, that's a generalisation. There are still TV shows, films and newspapers that will make you think, but they're certainly in a minority. There really isn't that much in the media that will stretch any of us intellectually or provide any kind of profound insight into the human condition. Now, the phrase that's often used to describe this trend is dumbing down. What we watch, read and listen to has been reduced to the lowest common denominator. Something that we can take on board and process and then sort of just get on with the rest of our busy lives. We don't want to have to stop and weigh the information that we've been given. We just want to know what we need to know and then move on. Third characteristic, we've had it's instant, it's undemanding and it's diverse. There's just so much of it. I have to admit to being a little bit primitive in this respect. My house only has the 5 regular TV channels and one of them, the reception's a bit dodgy. But there are literally hundreds out there for the technologically enabled amongst you to enrich your minds with. And it's just the same with other media forms. There are newspapers for people who like short words and big pictures. And there are newspapers for people who like long words and few pictures. There are websites to cater for every bizarre interest under the sun. I'm sure you've all seen that TV advert for the Wannadoo internet service, which makes precisely that point. It sort of comes up with a load of website names with people doing weird things. Everything from unusualweasels.com to taxidermyforbeginners.co.uk. We live in a society that is basically obsessed with choice, and the media plays perfectly up to that obsession. We don't have to worry ourselves with things that aren't to our taste. We can simply go and watch, read or listen to something else. But what does all this mean? What are the consequences of living in a society with a media that is instant, undemanding and diverse? Well, let's find out, shall we? Second heading, the media. What does it mean? Now, obviously, a lot of the consequences of the rise of the media are very good ones. It's brought us closer to other countries. It's provided a valuable source of entertainment. But it's no fun only talking about the good stuff. And I think there are some serious and damaging consequences of our obsession with and our reliance on the media. I've picked up three for us to flag up tonight. And the first one is this. The media becomes our substitute for thinking. Now, because the media is undemanding and instant, it basically saves us a job as far as thinking is concerned. Even if we wouldn't acknowledge it, probably most of our information and even most of our opinions come from something that we've seen on television or something that we've read in a newspaper. There are very few situations, therefore, where we have to figure out what we think on a particular subject for ourselves. We can usually find someone in the media making a point that we vaguely agree with and arguing it well, so there's no need for us to do any of the work. By spoon-feeding us, mass media basically makes us intellectually lazy, in general, of course. And that gives the media immense power, because, as Jim Morrison, lead singer of the band The Doors in the 70s, put it, whoever controls the media controls the mind. And obviously, in extreme cases that we see in some parts of the world, that'll lead to the media basically being a form of propaganda, filling people's minds with a particular message that those who control the media want to spread. Basically, the media that we've got means that we only want to think when we absolutely have to, and the media enables us to live like that, only thinking when we absolutely have to. That's the first one. The media is our substitute for thinking. Second consequence of living in a media society is that the media becomes our substitute for ethics. That is, for our moral codes, the things that decide how we behave in society. If the media already has us in a position where we don't really have to think, we simply believe what we're told, then it's a short step to it becoming the guiding force for our moral and our ethical frameworks, for how we decide what's right and wrong. So things like sex outside marriage become okay because the celebrities and the TV characters we watch and like are doing them. And because the media is changing so fast, our ethical frameworks are constantly on the shift. 30 years ago, you probably wouldn't have seen any swearing before the watershed. You wouldn't have come across homosexual relationships on the telly. But now these things are commonplace, and as a result, they're more and more acceptable in society. Whereas the Christian moral absolutes that many of us are used to are less and less common in the media, and therefore less and less more and more socially unacceptable. Now, to an extent, it is kind of a chicken and egg scenario. You could argue that the media is simply reflecting society rather than influencing it, but I think, to be honest, it is a bit of both. For instance, trial by tabloid is quite a common occurrence. Malcolm X, the American civil rights leader, talking about this kind of thing, said that the media is the most powerful entity on earth. They have the power to make the innocent guilty and to make the guilty innocent, and that's power. So the media is becoming our substitute for thinking and our substitute for ethics. And my third consequence is that the media becomes our substitute for relationships. I think, personally, this is the biggest and the saddest consequence of the media age. Obviously, it wouldn't be a talk on the media if we didn't have a little bit of multimedia. So we're going to have a little video clip now. If Paul can hit play, Kate can hit the lights, if you would, Kate, and Rich can fiddle with the sound. Let's see if this works.
We've become bored with watching actors give us phony emotions. We're tired of pyrotechnics and special effects. While the world we inhabit is in some respects counterfeit, there's nothing fake about Truman himself. No scripts, no cue cards. It isn't always Shakespeare, but it's genuine. It's a life.
I'm not gonna make it. You're gonna have to go on without me. No way, mister. You're going to the top of this mountain, broken legs and all.
We find many viewers waiting on all night for comfort.
You're crazy, you know that?
Well, for me, there is no difference between a private life and a public life. My life is my life. It is the Truman Show. The Truman Show is a lifestyle. It's a noble life. It is a truly blessed life.
Yeah, tell them I don't know. All right, promise me one thing, though. If I die before I reach the summit, you'll use me as an alternative source of food.
It's all true. It's all real. Nothing here is fake. Nothing you see on this show is fake. It's merely controlled.
Kate, if you could have the lights, please. Truman Show is a very good film. I'd recommend it. And it has a lot of interesting things to say about a lot of areas. But one particularly interesting aspect of it is its portrayal of a world that is obsessed by the media. For those of you who haven't seen it, The Truman Show is a film about a television program, The Truman Show, which is basically a 24/7 broadcast of the life of Truman Burbank, only he doesn't know it. All of the people in his life are actors, and the show's appeal comes from watching him behave in a way that he thinks is genuine, in a world that the viewer knows is anything but. And it's apparently compulsive viewing. That clip mentions viewers who leave Truman on all night for comfort. And it has crossed my mind that the real victim of the situation isn't Truman, trapped unknowingly in his artificial world, but the viewer who's trapped in front of the screen, watching him, interacting only with a world that is fake, out of choice rather than out of ignorance. How tragic. Research into our TV viewing habits says that we spend on average almost 2 hours a day watching TV, 45 minutes of which is done alone. And so we end up living in relative isolation, interacting only with the folk beamed into our living room via the magic box in the corner, and knowing more about what's going on in the lives of the characters in Neighbours than we do about the lives of our actual neighbours, of our friends, and of our work colleagues. You see, the media offers us the entertainment of relationships without any of the commitment of time, of energy, or of emotion. It's a friend for whom you never have to leave the sofa and who you can turn off when you get bored. But it just doesn't fill the gap and you end up a lonely couch potato. As the poet T.S. Eliot said some years ago, he was speaking of radio, but in words that could be applied to pretty much any media, he said, "Radio is a medium of entertainment which permits millions of people to listen to the same joke at the same time and yet remain lonesome." Excuse me. So those are our three consequences of living in a media-driven society. You might agree, you might disagree. But rather than take your disagreements straight to me, we're going to have 5 minutes discussing those ideas with the people who are sat around us. So what I'm going to ask you to do is sort of get into groups of, I'd suggest, about five or six, just sort of the people you're sat near, whatever's spatially convenient, really, and have a think about these questions that Paul's going to flash up for us. The first question is, which one of those consequences of our media society, hopefully you can remember them, do you think has had the most effect on people you know? The second one, do you think people generally realise how influential the media is on our thoughts and lives? And the third one, what do you think would be the consequences if people had a greater awareness of the media's influence? So just have a quick talk about those. In 5 minutes or so, we'll have a little bit of feedback. Off you go, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, if I could just interrupt you there to maybe swivel back this way and draw your discussions to a close. Okay, obviously, it requires you to be a little bit spontaneous with your feedback, but if anyone does have anything they'd like to comment in response to these questions, then we'll just run through them for 2-3 minutes. So the first one, which one of those consequences of our media society do you think has had the most effect on people you know? Anyone care to express any opinions? Anything interesting that anyone said in the group? The really good thing about this is you can feedback someone else's point in your group, so you don't even have to have it attributed to you. Yep, for the benefit of anyone who didn't hear that, Sue's saying that they do interrelate, and that, yeah, the media's impact on our ethics will, again, impact on our relationships and so on. Yep, Andy?
My wife.
My wife.
If the church is God's media, then all of these things look quite difficult to be really difficult.
Go on.
Media becomes our first thing to think of. Not, you don't have to think, but you can learn how to think through the church and how to address them issues. You're at this again straight out of church.
Yeah.
Not a substitute for a relationship, but the way of having a relationship with God.
So potentially, in an ideal scenario, the media, or in particular the church, would be able to train us in how to do our thinking, in how to do our ethics, and how to do our relationships. Yep, brilliant, great point. Any more on the first one? Okay, we'll move on to the second one. Do you think that people generally realise how influential the media is on our lives and our thoughts? Yep. Yeah, so a lot of the time the media forms our opinions without us being aware of them.
It's also not just, we assume that the news will tell us facts, but it's actually how they portray the facts and which facts they decide to give us. So if you choose the idea of the Iraq war, the idea of setting up, do we know where that actually took place? I mean, you've got to actually question every piece of information that we've ever been told, because underlying it, there is some ulterior motive there. Whatever that really is.
Yeah, I think that leads us nicely onto the third question then. So, what are the consequences? What would be the consequences if people had a greater awareness of the media's influence? Make the media less powerful. Okay. That's what I'm after, Matt.
It might make the media smaller in terms of if people were aware of its influence, it would be more difficult. Therefore, the media has to be good. That's the media expression.
Right. Everyone understand that? I think I just about got it. Yeah, Steve?
The media doesn't necessarily have authority over people, but people give a lot of maybe not consciously, but just by letting it influence you, giving it authority. So people are aware that it has that
Yep, that's great. That's very helpful. Okay, so we've done what is the media like? We've done what does it mean? We're going to move on to what does the Bible have to say? And in order to do that, we're going to have a couple of readings. So Fiona and Anne are going to come up and give us those. I'll just hand over to them.
Okay, the first one is from Paul's letter to the Philippians, and it's chapter 4, verses 4 to 9, and that's page 1181 in your Bibles. Okay, chapter 4, starting at verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honourable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. And the next one is taken from 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 1 to 6. And is on 1162 of the Bible. Therefore, having this ministry by the mercy of God, we do not lose heart, but we have renounced disgraceful, underhanded ways. We refuse to practice cunning or to tamper with God's word, but by the open statement of the truth, we would commend ourselves to everyone's conscience in the sight of God. And even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled only to those who are perishing. In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. For what we proclaim is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, with ourselves as your servants, for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, "Let light shine out of darkness," has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ.
Great, thanks, ladies. Okay, so third heading, the media. What does the Bible have to say? Now, it might seem to some of you like a bit of a redundant question. After all, surely the Bible was written in a time before we had such a thing as the media. So how could it possibly have anything to say on the subject? Well, at Christ Church Central, it's our conviction that the Bible is the Word of God, and therefore it has something to say about every aspect of our lives. And there are certainly plenty of helpful guidelines in there for anyone who's thinking about this question of how we respond to living in a media age. I've got three applications for us to take away this evening. Funny how everything seems to come in threes, but it is the magic number after all. And here's the first one. We must make God's Son our primary authority. Now, there are loads of situations in life where we need to decide who to listen to. For instance, back at my house, we've just repainted our back room. And for weeks the debate raged as to what colour we should go for. Anyone and everyone who came through the door, and that includes some people who are here tonight, was asked for their opinion. And there were those who were convinced that a warm, creamy beige colour was the only way to go. And there were those, conversely, who thought beige equaled bland, and a fresh, pale blue was called for. And Helen, my housemate and landlady, had to decide who to listen to. And in the end, she listened to the Blue Party, who were mostly girls and therefore know far more about colour schemes. Now, that's a trivial example, but instances where we need to make a decision as to who to listen to, who to trust and who to follow are extremely common. And a lot of the time, one of our options as to who to listen to is the media, which presents us with all kinds of instructions from what not to wear to who not to vote for. And a lot of the time, the people in the media who are telling us this stuff are the experts, so why shouldn't we listen to them? Why shouldn't we just go for whatever belief system and lifestyle is presented as okay on our televisions, in our newspapers and in magazines? Well, here's the reason. There is someone who claims to have a higher authority. Turn, if you would, to Matthew chapter 17, verses 1 to 8. It's a reading that we didn't have, but I will read it for us now. It's on page 991 of the Church Bibles, Matthew 17, 1 to 8, and we'll see there someone who claims to be more of an expert than anyone in the media. Matthew 17, starting at verse 1. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John his brother, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, his clothes became white as light. And behold, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. And Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is good that we are here. If you wish, I will make 3 tents here, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah. He was still speaking when, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them. And a voice from the cloud said, This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. When the disciples heard this, they fell on their faces and were terrified. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, Rise and have no fear. And when they lifted up their eyes, they saw no one but Jesus only. Just have a look down at verse 5 and what God says to the people who are assembled there, to Peter, James and John. He says, This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. So Jesus has just taken Peter, James and John up a mountain to show them something. Something very special indeed. They get up there and Jesus gets transformed into this glorious figure and joined in verse 3 by two more glorious figures, Moses and Elijah. And as we'll see in our Bible overview series that we're currently working our way through, Moses and Elijah are two of the biggest names in the Bible, real heroes from the past. It'd be a bit like if Sven-Göran Eriksson recruited you into the England football team and took you off to the La Manga training camp. And he sort of took you onto the pitch, and there he was joined by Bobby Moore and Sir Alf Ramsey. Only this experience in the Bible here is even greater, obviously. So what are Moses and Elijah, these great men of God from the Old Testament, what are they going to say? Well, nothing, because God himself speaks and tells Peter, James and John that the one they should be listening to is his son, Jesus. Moses and Elijah were great, but Jesus is infinitely better. He's God's son, and therefore he speaks with God's authority. That's a better endorsement than any columnist in the Times is ever going to receive. God himself telling us to listen to Jesus, that Jesus is the primary authority who we should be paying attention to. But there are probably some people here who've never really listened to what Jesus has to say. So perhaps this week it'd be worth you taking some time and instead of watching telly or reading whatever newspaper takes you fancy, that is, instead of listening to the media, picking up a Bible and reading one of the gospel accounts of what Jesus said and did. Because Christians would claim that he is a far more valuable source of information and of guidance than anything the media could offer. But once we've started listening to Jesus and making him our primary authority for how to live, how do we keep it up? Well, that's my second point. We must make gospel thinking our primary influence. Now, the overwhelming temptation, as I'm sure you've seen, is for the media to become our primary influence, for it to shape what we think about and how we live. After all, we've seen how massively powerful it is in our culture. But as Christians, we're told to think differently. Last term at Christchurch Central, we studied the book of Philippians, and we saw Paul write to the young church he started, and he wrote this in chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. Fiona read it for us a moment ago. Have a look at Philippians 4, 8 and 9, page 1182 of your church Bibles. Paul says to them, Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honourable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. what you have learned and received and heard and seen in me. Practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. Now, obviously, Paul didn't have the type of late-night shows broadcast on Channel 5 in mind when he wrote these words, but the church then, as now, was under pressure to live in a way that was indistinguishable from the world around it, and basically to have all the same influences. And Paul was keen that instead of letting all that stuff dominate their thinking, they should instead think about good stuff, about gospel-type stuff, about the sort of stuff in the letter that he'd just written. Which means that, as Christians, asking the question, what should I watch or what should I read, is both valid and important. Now, I'm not going to give you any specifics, because I think it's down to the individual, but it's certainly a question worth asking yourself. Certainly, some of what the media presents us with is not true, honourable, just, pure, lovely, commendable, etc. And if it's starting to have a greater influence over our thinking than the gospel, the truth we believe about Jesus, then we've got a problem. And we've got to make sure that if we do decide that a particular programme, for instance, isn't appropriate viewing, that we actually replace its influence with something positive. It isn't enough just to stop watching stuff that troubles our conscience, because then we'll just end up sort of thinking about how good we've been. We need to take steps to fill our minds with the sort of stuff Paul has been talking about in that letter to the Philippians. With thoughts of Jesus and the salvation that he's provided, with thoughts of other Christians and how we can assist them in spreading the gospel, and with thoughts of heaven and how we can keep looking forward to it. The media's influence is a powerful and a subtle one, and regardless of the fact that it won't all be a bad influence, and some of it will be very helpful, we still need to make sure that our primary influence is gospel thinking. And finally, as we seek to spread that gospel to a media-driven society, we must make gospel preaching our primary activity. Now, one of the questions, one of the temptations facing the church in this country at the moment, I think, is to make style more important than substance. Let me explain. Because the media has made people so used to seeing snappy, flashy presentations with cool music and ultra-modern computer graphics, we think that unless our church services and other Christian events are full of the same kind of stuff, then no one will listen. And there is a healthy motive behind that. It springs from a conviction that people should listen, and from a desire to make Christianity relevant. And since everyone today has such a short attention span, maybe we need all the flashy stuff to keep them interested. The problems come, however, when we start to put all our focus on the style of our meetings at the expense of the substance. At the end of the day, you can have all the bells and whistles in the world, but they aren't going to change anyone's life. That's why here at Christchurch Central, our meetings are designed to have the Bible talk as our main focus. We do use some modern stuff with our PowerPoint and our rocking band. But we don't, I hope, come together to show off our latest multimedia presentations. Gospel preaching is, and must continue to be, our primary activity. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 1 to 6, and have a look at the example Paul gives there. Anne read it for us earlier. It's on page 1162 of your church Bibles. Now, Paul's approach, when he was trying to spread the gospel, was just to openly tell people the truth. Have a look at verse 2. He could have dressed it up, he could have made it all fancy, but he refuses to brainwash people or to change the message to make it more acceptable. His conviction is that just telling people the truth about God is the only honest way to do things. Why? Surely he'd be after a more successful or a more lucrative strategy. Well, his approach is founded on a belief that the reason people don't become Christians isn't that they have a problem with the style of the church, it's that they're blind to the truth, because the God of this world, verse 4, has blinded them. The devil keeps people from believing the gospel, from seeing the light, as Paul puts it. And that means that no amount of flashy media-type stuff is going to make the difference. Because at the end of the day, it's only God who can open blind eyes. Our part, as Christians, is to proclaim not ourselves, nor any of our own impressive technological or stylistic expertise, but Jesus Christ as Lord, and then trust God to do the rest. And that's very liberating. If we can use video clips, music and computers to help us tell people the truth more clearly, then that's brilliant. But if we can't, it doesn't really matter. because gospel preaching is meant to be our primary activity. And whatever else changes about the way we do church, that definitely should not. So gospel preaching should be our primary activity. Now I'm just going to round off with a couple of quotes for you to go away thinking about. I'll just put this first one in context. It's from the James Bond film Tomorrow Never Dies, where the world is under threat by a crazed media tycoon called Elliot Carver, whose plan is to kickstart World War III and then have his cameras trained on Ground Zero so he can get exclusive coverage of the event and make billions of pounds. And in the climactic showdown that Bond always has with these villains, he tells Carver the foolishness of his plan, and he says this to him. He says, "You forgot the first rule of mass media, Elliot. Give the people what they want." I think that's an excellently put first rule of the media. Give the people what they want. And I suggest that by contrast, the first rule for our evangelism should be this. Give the people what they need. See what I did there? And I hope that's... I hope tonight's been helpful and interesting for you, and I hope it has made you think a bit, and maybe changed your approach to how you view the media, and how you view the society that we live in. And I hope, therefore, that it'll help all of us to live lives that do a better job of glorifying God.